And we are live with the Nerdable podcast, episode 56. And this week we're joined by a guest, and two guests, should I say. And we've got Deck and Ulrich from Digital Cyber Cherries. They are the current developers of Hypercharge Unbox, which is a game that I've been keeping an eye on for a long time. Just kind of think small soldiers, but you are fighting waves of other toys that you've no doubt experienced in from your childhood. So yeah, let's jump straight into it and run the intro. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
Hello.
I think I did quite a nice introduction there. I always kind of screw it up a little bit. Never too confident. But anyway, how is everyone's Sunday today?
Good, thank you.
Good as well, thank you.
And I reserve the right to avoid comment.
You just get to be miserable.
Yeah, it's lazy Sunday, so good, always good.
Excellent, cool. So, yeah, did a brief introduction, said that you guys from Digital Cyber Cherries and that you are currently working on Hypercharge Unboxed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this game is something that I've been paying attention to for a long time, and it kind of has quite a long history. It was, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it was announced in, wasn't it 2016?
Something like that, yeah. Maybe even further back, Ulrich, can you remember?
Yeah, it was about 2015, I guess.
Okay, yeah, wow.
And it was initially supposed to be PvP, wasn't it?
So the current game that we're working on is Hypercharge Unboxed, which is we basically worked on the original Hypercharge for about 2 years, and basically the scope of the project kind of got a bit away from us. it was PvP how we developed it from the get go, but it was originally like meant to be designed as a co-op shooter, and it just kind of got away from us, so we kind of left the original Hypercharge where it was, and that was the one that was originally announced in 2015, and then we basically just stopped where we were and then just went, no, we need to go back to the beginning, back to the drawing board, and let's put this into a more direct direction. And just started working on Unboxed, and it is kind of Hypercharge. Hypercharge is like the theme of the games, and yeah, so Hypercharge itself has quite a history now.
So,
fortunately.
So what are you guys planning to bring the PvP back, or are you focusing solely on the sort of wave based game that we've got at the moment?
I think we're focusing on this one first to nail what we want here. And pretty much all the mechanics and everything are going to like carry over, and it's only going to need, certain changes to what we've already built to move it over to the PvP, and then the PvP is much quicker to iterate on. So, but that's kind of, it's obviously directly said that we're having PvP in a way, but it's something we're trying out, and we may return to it. But it's Hypercharge Unboxed specifically is just going to be co-op on release.
Okay, cool. So tell us a little about yourselves and your outfit, because I know a little earlier, either was it this year or the year after, sorry, I have notes and then I don't look at them and I kind of wing it. So you pushed out a Steam announcement in December last year about kind of how the scope of everything is changing, and even the studio itself has kind of changed up a little bit. So yeah, tell us a little about Digital Cyber Cherries and your guys' history.
We're just a small indie studio. We've been going for quite a while now. Ulrich, can you?
Yes.
How long?
I think for 2.5-3 years now, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yes.
October 2015 or 2016. Can't remember.
Yeah, it's something like that. But me and Ulrich specifically have been working together for a very long time. We used to work originally for a company called Monochrome, that developed the first-person shooter Contagion, like a zombie shooter back from back in 2013. After we left that company, we then started our own company, Digital Cyber Cherries, and just started working on games that, you know, we wanted to play and games that we wanted to work on. We ended up just kind of, you know, rekindling friendships with previous developers in the new company. We just started working on cool things that we wanted to do. We didn't really have a direction at first. It was just, you know, learning new tools, getting used to ourselves, the development team. And then after we worked on our first release title, New Retro Arcade, we then started working on the unboxed titles. And yeah, we had some people, some long-time members leave around December last year. But we've had some even older members come back and some old friends join us, so to help us like wrap up the title and finish it up and stuff like that. But it's the core team is still here and still working solid and still, you know, full steam ahead. And did I miss anything there, Auric?
No, that's pretty much it.
Cool.
There's one thing I kind of picked up there. You said the unboxed games, plural.
Hypercharge, unbox, it's all just blurs to me now. It's all just hypercharged games.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, sorry if I can say something here. Sure. The old Hypercharge had also, because you mentioned this earlier, only PvP, but that's actually not entirely true. Even the old Hypercharge had wave-based or enemy-based game modes in it, so
yeah, we just couldn't settle on a direction.
Yeah. So it's basically like a whole lot more, but then we figured out, hey, we're gonna have to maybe break it down. So then the unboxed was basically what we ended up with, and now coming back to unbox, we're realizing, hey, there might be a few more things that we eventually want to put in, depending on how well it goes with unboxed.
Such as PvP for the future, though.
It's cool. I mean, when we did the preview of the game, looking at what you guys have done to it so far, I think with Early Access 2.0 that's coming out, there's a lot of changes inbound. So what can players that are familiar with kind of the initial Early Access release expect from 2.0?
I say this with just utmost positivity. It's gonna be like almost a completely new game. Not just in terms of the usability, but also just the gameplay and the direction, the weapons, the enemies, just everything that you've played before has been improved. The overall gameplay loop has been completely redesigned. It does play like a very different game. This doesn't include any of incredible graphical improvements.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, just be a bit more specific. I think probably the biggest difference is that the current game has not a lot of verticality. Something that we've been picking up from the community, but also that we felt was really missing, is that people actually want to explore the verticality in the game. And so our focus was, what can we do that people have the chance to explore and see those areas and explore them by themselves?
Take advantage of the toy theme is new motto. Yeah.
Yeah. Under that constraint that you are a toy, seeing everything in a completely different way. So I think that's probably the biggest change now with this update.
Yeah, and you can see that you guys have been having a lot of fun with that as well. With the toy store is, I mean, I think the first thing that we did when we played it was see how high we could climb, and try and get a decent vantage point to shoot down at all of the little the enemies that were coming at us. And like, I know what you're saying with verticality is that it felt more fun at the early stages to be down on the ground because that's where the action was, until you got attacked by like the jet planes, which were drastically overpowered at the time.
Yeah. A lot of the enemies were actually a bit on that overpowered level. We've redesigned all of that now, trying to move away from the whole bullet sponge kind of enemies, make them all breakable and take, again, just it's all about taking advantage of that toy theme. That's what we're aiming for now.
I think another thing I want to add here is one thing that we discovered as well, there is not a lot of motivation for players to progress or to replay the game in certain ways. So we rethought how can we incentivize certain mechanics or the players to use certain mechanics, for example, unlocks or at the end that there are a certain gratification that you won or have a victory in the game. Something that is currently a bit lacking. So we thought a lot about the entire process of why are you playing the game? What is the motivation? And how do you, what is the reason for you to come back to play more of the game?
Okay, and what have you sort of implemented to hopefully help improve that?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Verticality. Aspect is that the only thing you've added to kind of encourage people to return?
No, we've added a proper difficulty system now, to make which basically allows you to kind of have a the old game we tried to do something that didn't work, which was bind the difficulty to the number of players,
right?
And it didn't work because it just didn't work, and we couldn't balance it no matter how much we tried. So we went back to a more traditional approach, giving players the option to pick a difficulty level while also having a separate difficulty scaling value that's hand tweaked per level for the number of players who play with you on your team. So we've gone with that approach this time. Also just with how the unlocks and the weapons and how everything is like that you consider content, whether it be just the cosmetic stuff or the weapons and items in the game, power-ups, everything is distributed now with a more just a better curve to the gameplay. Everything isn't just given to you on step one and it's overcomplicated. The game starts off and then you get new features, you get new turrets, you get new buildables, you get to customize more of your action figure and stuff like that. So you start off with a generic base level action figure with a lame name, and then you end up with a really cool kind of customized dude, and you've unlocked all the best stuff for him, you've got the best buildables so you can tackle the harder difficulties. So it's just about bringing the entire experience of all the disconnected pieces that we once had into just one tight-knit package that just will have people coming back wanting to complete that level again and save that last core or complete it and get the higher rewards or higher medals on every level, because it's like got a decent difficulty curve now where you can really feel yourself getting better and understanding and learning and defeating the mechanics and each level offers a more different experience now. The verticality is one thing, but also the flow of the gameplay in waves. It's no longer just like in the old game, everything was just thrown at you one at a time. Now levels have themes and the waves have themes of toys as well. So you really kind of feel that each wave of enemies is a bit more handcrafted now, which it is. That's why it feels that way. So it's all these little things. And the randomization feature we've also included now for how certain elements like weapons and pickups and stuff are distributed around the level to incentivize the players to explore the environment more now. Batteries, pickups, and all the items and weapons and all the other new power-ups we've added are just scattered around the level and can really change the way players play every time they come back to a level.
Yeah, now that you mentioned this, the pickup system is something that we entirely reworked, because before you had your loadout and then you stuck to the loadout. And with playing the game, we felt it's actually important that players can make that choice, or even, especially when they play co-op, have the ability to change the weapon on the fly with their co-op players. So now you have to decide what is the best type of weapon, and in the game you can change it directly on the spot, which feels like completely different than what we had before.
Yeah, it's getting me quite excited for the update now.
There's plenty more things I'm forgetting, but yeah, it's almost teetering on the edge of being like a completely new game, just in every which way.
Mm. Yeah,
better support for everything that was there before. Like we've doubled down on the whole ensuring that the split screen is working good and the controller support is now really good. We've got proper aim assist in there that doesn't feel too cheaty. Yeah, just the split screen performance has now been like quadrupled. Just the overall performance of the game has also been beyond doubled. I can run this thing. Oh, sorry, go on, Eric.
Oh, yeah. One reason I just want to add here as well, while we never brought the update out earlier, is because of those changes, we had to tear apart pretty much everything. So we thought a long about this. What should we do? What should we commit to the community? And then we figured, hey, to get to the point where we actually feel happy, probably the best solution is just wait or finish the entirety of that mechanics. Otherwise, it's just like an open heart surgery and people will not fully understand and feel how it actually is supposed to be. And so that was one of the reasons why we made the decision, hey, let's finish those main mechanics where we feel happy, even though it means that it takes a bit longer than usual.
Mm-hmm. But it'd be worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely, yeah.
It definitely. I'm looking through some of the updates that you guys have posted recently, and the things that you are going to be bringing to the game genuinely look like fantastic.
Thank you.
I wanted to just kind of throw out there is why the toy theme?
So that comes from me, because I was the one who was pushing it in the original. It all comes from Rat Maps straight away. I love modified Counter-Strike and Half-Life maps back in the day, you know, like the ones where you were in like environments, and it was like even modded maps for Halo 2 back in the day that were trying to pull that off, and everything all the way back to, you know, CS 1.6, you know, any game that had custom maps, people attempted these rat maps. But scaling a chair that's, you know, made for regular scale and scaling it 6,000 times, you know, kind of leads to some pretty horrible textures. And even games that have attempted this in the past, like everything is uses a lot of effects, or everything is really flat lit or really noisily detailed. And I basically just had the idea that, hey, I reckon I could pull that off. Like, I think I could render a world from a toy scale and not have it look like a, you know, stretched texture or tiling texture a million times up the wall. You know, that, those are the two common things with rat maps. You know, you have the either or. Either it's high quality up close, or it's tiled like a billion times across a giant wall. So we just developed a couple of different shaders and material templates, and just some tricks to kind of blend, you know, a multiple distance masks and stuff. And we just ran from there. So we just knew we wanted to build a rat map style game because we had the ability to actually make this environment. And it's just a cool environment in first person shooters, in my opinion. And I just wanted to do one that actually looked good rather than feeling like a regular sized game stretched up. You know what I mean? Where everything's kind of a bit off scale. Like, I mean, we all of the props in our game, all of the environment, everything's like measured, and we have like a strict scaling rule. Like, everything is multiplied by a specific value, so everything is based around the predefined size scale of our characters, which we use. And Yeah. So we just kind of wanted to do something in that theme, and then obviously toys was the answer. Action figures and stuff like that. I don't personally collect them, but I appreciate the craftsmanship, and I have, you know, friends and stuff who do collect a lot of action figures, and it's action figures then lets you, you know, spill into a lot of different genres, like superheroes, for example, which, you know, who doesn't like superheroes and comics? And then, yeah, so all of this just came together, and that is the birth of the Hypercharge game series. We just knew we wanted to do all of these little things.
Yeah, it was one of the things I noticed when we were playing it originally, actually, was that I'd played some of these, like the Ramas, like you'd said, and that was one of the things I'd always noticed was that's very clearly just a regular chair that they've locked a multiplier on.
Mm-hmm.
I never got that feeling from playing Hypercharge. It was, okay, this actually looks how it should and how you would expect it to. And now you've explained it with your sort of predetermined scaling everything, that makes an awful lot more sense as to how you managed to get that so well balanced. And it does just look like a toy store, like it should. It doesn't look like it's just been stretched and blown up to massive proportions. On the sort of development side, you've mentioned that you don't actually have an own studio. How have you guys gone about working remotely with each other?
With a lot of effort. We've just done this so long now. We just have just our own internal methods of timekeeping and scheduling and you know, strict I guess restraints we put on ourselves, you know, to ensure that every one of our developers across the different time zones is catered for. And it's just a long, very long process. It's taken us a while to come into it. And there's, you know, it's never perfect sometimes, and sometimes deadlines are harder to hit if there's, you know, people with complex lives living across the world on a completely different time zone. You know, there's a lot of moving pieces. A lot can go wrong. But yeah, we just try our best, and there's no real secret that we have. We just work really hard at it, and we've just been doing it so long.
Have you had a sort of one problem that you had that led you to develop a method of working that's made it easier, or has it just kind of been little bits here and there that have been okay, maybe we need to try this next time or so?
Been a bit of everything, honestly. It's we've had some things in the past where we've been like, oh yeah, let's try and, you know, like let's for example, like, oh, let's, you know, aim for weekends. You know, let's always have a meeting on weekends. You know, it's a simple, obvious one, and you learn after a while that, you know, people have lives outside of sometimes what they do on the computer, and weekends are sometimes the only time they're free, whereas during the week after work is when they can work most of the time. So we just have to be smart about, you know, people who are smart and cater to the lives of our team members and stuff, and just make sure, you know, they're all included and they keep us up to date, and, you know, we try and help with the scheduling with them.
Yeah, are you using stuff like Slack and everything for that, or are you going down?
Oh, we've tried them all. we use one called ClickUp. At the minute, we've moved around through every single one. We've used Slack in the past. We use Discord for communication now, and we use a real-time board and ClickUp for our like just project management and stuff.
I mean, it's a very thin line between staying flexible and having or doing micromanagement and do a flexible management of the projects. And we have been always, like Peck said, trying to work around the individual schedules. But at some point, obviously, you have to have some kind of schedule that makes everything a bit more foreseeable. And so we've been working with different tools, from Trello to Jira to GitHub, whatever you name it. And now we just recently had two more tools called Real-Time Board, which is a online, like whiteboard, which is good for concept and flexible agile development. And then that was good as long as you don't have like a procedural or a more defined tasks. But once you move over to the tasks, then something like ClickUp was our choice.
Mm-hmm.
We have like a proper Kanban board, and where we do planned sprints, and that works quite well. So in
overall, we just needed something a bit more powerful than Trello. Basically, that's what a lot of people use. We just needed something a bit more than that. That's why we wanted to ClickUp.
And in terms of the production method, I guess we're using partially a little bit of Scrum, but then at one point it became we actually working better with a waterfall model. So where we plan actually certain stages out, and then have enough headroom where we move around tasks.
Are you taking notes of those devices we might be able to steal?
Yes. So has like working remotely been one of the main difficulties that you guys have had with development, or is there something else that's been a struggle? If you've obviously had any struggles, that is.
Oh yeah, struggles. I'd say for remote development struggles, I guess it's finding good reliable people. We've been burned by people that we, you know, were thought were friends and would worked with for a while and stuff, and so that's probably for me one of the hardest, honestly.
Yeah, I think that the biggest issue is that we are in a way very or we have to rely on the trust of people, so we cannot enforce or make sure that somebody's delivering something on a certain schedule. So it's your own self responsibility to work in the team. So in the end we can see, okay, did we meet the deadline? But in the end, it's that enforceability that we don't have that much. So we kind of rely on the trust of people, and that's a good thing. But at the same time, it exposes us to a lot of risk in some way, or the team, it exposes the team, you know, if people just say, you know, I'm just disappearing for 2 months and I'm not telling anyone. These are the kind of things that we learned to work with, and we're trying to do our best to mitigate those things.
It takes a while, but you know, we eventually just ended up with the best, like, you know, the best developers, you know, lasted out the ups and downs of you know, releases and games. You know, you just end up with the truly dedicated people at the end.
Yeah,
I think that's where we're at now.
Yeah,
I think that goes for anything that sort of works in that space. Is you're always going to get those that come in and they've got a real good talk, but the ones that actually get into that scenario and that scene, all of a sudden it's not quite what you were expecting from them, if at all. But like I say, you do by the end of that, almost by proxy of going through all of that and going through all of that as a group, you end up with a really dedicated group of people at the end that can see, they've got the ability to see past all of the bollocks and crap that some people will throw at you, to just then be like, I'm doing this and this is what we're doing, and get on with it as a team and not fart ass you about with other things. And the minimum and one, I'm sure you've probably heard every excuse in the book as to why a deadline hasn't been met at this point off of people. So, but yeah, like I say, you end up with a really sort of dedicated team out of that. So it really is a swings and roundabouts sort of case.
Yeah, that's it, absolutely.
So, yep. You know, 20 dedicated hands is better than 100 really half-assed ones. So
yeah, this is definitely also one thing that we more learn. Everybody has a lot of different hats on. In the past, we've been trying to be more open to bring on people, and but then it makes it also way harder for everyone the more people you have, obviously.
Yeah.
And then we in a way also more, how do you say, the past, we try to perfectionize everything by choosing certain people who just can't do only or can do that job the best. Now we're way more open that we say, hey, actually, we can do it ourselves in a way. It's maybe not as good as some specialists, but it gets 80% done. And that's more than enough, because perfect is the enemy of good. It's something we always have to remember ourselves, because we are a small indie developer, not a big AAA studio. That's something we really have to be aware. As much as we try to do the best quality that we can, we're not a team with 250 people building games with big budgets. Really, in the end, have to stay on track and develop games in a certain time frame, even though that Hypercharge, unfortunately, is probably the worst case scenario with now, I don't know, 3 years, 3-4 years, but it's actually way too long.
Yeah,
I think though, like credit to you guys, you've been through like a fair bit for an indie studio, like over the past 2 years, at least from what I've seen from following you guys from, you know, 2016. So I mean, you've been doing well. You've been getting along.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's been good most of the time. Especially now in this last year or so of 9-10 months of development or whatever is. Yeah, it's been it's been good. Very very productive and yeah, everyone's like really feeling the flow of the game now and. What we want, so it's important when you're developing it, you don't want to be bored of your own game.
But also, and what you just mentioned, we also learned that not everything is the end of the world. You're getting a bit more relaxed with certain situations. You're going like, hey, that's just a thing, you still keep going, you're not just giving up because of certain things don't work out the way you want. You just keep going and you do the best that you can. So absolutely, you're absolutely right there.
Yeah, and that's like a fantastic sort of attitude to have with it all. I mean, especially with what's gone on with Telltale Games recently and Capcom Vancouver and stuff. There's a lot of surprising closures. And for you guys to kind of suffer the losses that you did in December and to kind of come out the other side with this newfound like productivity and focus and excitement for the game that you've been working on for a couple of years is really great to see.
No, it's awesome. Like it's rekindled that fire in the development team. It really has.
So obviously the game being announced in 2015, 2016 kind of became the unboxed version, which was more wave-based focus. The gaming sort of, or gaming as a whole, has kind of evolved a lot over the past couple of years. And I'm pretty sure you're going to kind of guess where I'm going with this, but are we going to see like a battle royale? It kind of in a weird way could lend itself to that, but
oh, it absolutely could. Just a whole house with a back garden. Like, think of how big that is when you're 6 inches. Yeah. Now we've got working vehicles. Like, you know, doing really optimized netcode is one of my fortes. But we've actually discussed this like back and forth amongst the company. Before we did Hypercharge, this is going even back before 2016. So far, I remember this is before even PUBG. Yeah. Like many game developers out there, I almost went for it. Many people had the idea, you know, battle royale. The idea, the concept's been around for a very long time, and we almost went into making one, and it would have started in like 2014.
Wow.
2015 and something like that. But the problem is as a small company, it's like you've got like server costs to think about, and if the game doesn't build a community and it dies, it becomes like a catch-22. It's like no one will play your game because there's no players, and you've got no players because no one will play the game.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult for especially for indies, you know, to... And then there's the other side of it where you do get the popularity and you do get the players, but then you can't afford the AWS server fees because the game maybe doesn't bring in enough money or you know, certain delays. So you end up having to close more servers and then that turns players away. And there's just these big worries where I think a small unfunded little indie studio like ourselves, I think probably couldn't pull it off. We can make good games in the areas that we can afford to.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be like trying to take on an MMO. Like, yeah, it's almost on that, I think.
In that regard, though, are there plans, I guess, to open up the game to like Steam Workshop and stuff to have like players create their own like toys to fight against? Or even their own like environments and maps and stuff.
That would be awesome. I mean, that's something I think most developers need to go through Epic to get like a special version of UE4 made, so you show up on the UE4 launcher. I'd be up for that. That'd be awesome. Like, we have a great like library of assets and stuff that, you know, like our artists have built, you know, specifically for the game, and it's, you know, they're really good to, you know, build different room layouts out with. You know, we've had like, you know, 50 to 100 different maps built with our assets that almost look completely different, and we're, yeah, it's something I would like to go for it. You know, it's one of them that just have to, you know, see if it's worth it at the time, if there's enough players to warrant it, if enough people are asking for it, then. You know, we're a team that listens to our community, So we'll just have to try and read it when it comes about.
I mean, speaking of other game modes, ever considered lending it maybe towards Prop Hunt as like an arcade thing?
That'd be good. Yeah, there's no I mean, there's already some prop hunt specific games out there, isn't there?
Or just as like a little mode in there, because that thing seems to still be ever popular in COD as it's thrown in and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely no full relevance to it. And I think maybe like in a toy store or something could really lend itself nicely to that.
No, definitely. Yeah, with the high numbers of props and stuff. Yeah, no, it is actually something we've already thought of. We had like a semi-working prop hunt game mode in the old Hypercharge. We just never doubled down on it for this one yet because we're just focused so much on the co-op stuff at the moment. But we may revisit it, you know, especially if we're also considering, you know, PvP and other forms of gameplay. So once we've built the game, we'll probably just end up having fun with it. Again, let's just listen to the community and see what people want.
Have there been? Oh, sorry, go on.
No, after you, mate.
I was going to say, has there been any sort of ideas for whether it's game modes or whether it's certain types of enemies that have just been a bit too ridiculous?
The T-Rex that we're putting in is one of them because of the difficulty. We've just had loads of them. Some of the original ideas involved. Actual humans like coming into the environment. Like we had a whole moment where, it was an idea that started way too big, and then we scaled it down, and then it was still too big. So the original idea was, yeah, a human would come into the environment, and if you didn't notice and you didn't stop moving, the human would walk over and pick you up, and you'd be basically dead. So they just like come and pick you and take you out of the environment, but it was too much. It was too much to get the human to animate and look right. But then that idea then got squashed down to just having humans in the environment in general. But again, it falls apart with the animations and stuff. Just trying to, or even the detail. Like, you know, it's fine when we can render like, you know, super high poly tessellated cardboard boxes with realistic tape reflection. But when it comes to, you know, giant 400 foot humans that you're only 6 inches in height compared to, we just couldn't get it at a quality level where where it didn't bring down the quality of our environment and everything else that we worked on, so we ditched it.
Yeah, I can imagine even like a thread of cotton at that scale is bordering on like what, like steel cable or something at that point.
So yeah, it's understand the... massive. Yeah, all the little details we try and, you know, push out with normal maps and crazy lighting tricks and everything, but yeah, it is crazy detail when you get in that close.
I suppose that's kind of become a blessing and a curse.
In a way, yeah. I mean, it does lend itself to the fact that the environment, like, because we have to detail it so much that you can be near it in first person, it does mean that then when you are further away from it, it looks even better. And then it also lends itself to a potential for like VR or something in the future as well. Something we've thought about.
I couldn't imagine that in VR.
Yeah, I mean,
I was about to say VR would be really, really fun with that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it as well because the VR player in our little, and this is nothing that's again in for release. This is just something we're, you know, debating with our ideas because we've got everything built already. So, but it's because everything is so huge and everything is so detailed. Being stood in that room in VR is really cool because you can stick your face really close to everything and still maintain that ridiculous detail. So yeah, really thinking of taking advantage of that and having the VR players be human sized, like playing with action figures or toys. I think that would be awesome. But again, it's just something we need to see how it goes.
Awesome. Okay, so the one thing, like, whenever I've mentioned Unboxed to people is, that's like small soldiers. what are the chances that you could get the license from DreamWorks?
Oh, that would be so good, wouldn't it? Having them characters in here, they'd fit right in.
It would be amazing.
I mean, if I can say something here.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
With the licensing, we thought about this from the beginning, actually. Is there a way that we can get, let's say, Hasbro or Mattel, any one of the big dogs? The big issue is they don't give you the license until you actually make it.
Right.
So it's like they let you... swim out in the open sea. They want to see that you make it to the beach on your own, and once you're there, they're gonna throw you the life jacket. That's kind of the way that this goes. At least that's something that we have been discussing with our IP lawyer and with people. So the first thing that we have to do is that the game itself is successful.
Yeah.
Once it's successful, then the chance that we might get somebody involved is exponentially higher, because then they see, okay, this is making us money, so then we can have DLCs or additional stuff.
Yeah, you can start to bring in like actual like Nerf licenses and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
How has I guess, like, thinking about that must mean like all of the toys that you've created like in the like enemy wise have been like your guys' own creation.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this whole licensing thing. So how difficult has that been to create something that makes sense but is kind of almost dancing on that line of like IP infringement?
We have a bit of experience from our first game, New Retro Arcade.
Yeah.
Like as Ulrich mentioned, we have an IP lawyer that we are in contact with, and we, you know, try and run everything by them, you know, make sure that everything is just different enough, and it's you know what I mean, it's you can guess, or it's on that, you know, nostalgia goggle blurriness where it's like, yeah, I think that's what they used to look like, but they're like different enough. Yeah, we just try and not very carefully not infringe, and then double check everything that we do, just to make sure that it is different enough, and that all of our artists, you know, concepted it on their own, and that then it was, you know, built around that concept to its specific designs, and everything just, yeah, it just has that kind of theme and that feel, you know what I mean? It's like one good thing that we used as reference is official or you know, ones that are sold in actual stores from big to medium companies that are knockoffs themselves, and just see how do they with the actual toys get away with it. Because, I mean, it's obviously, you know, if you have a physical toy in a shop and then there's a video game representation that's somewhat similar, it's much harder to prove than if it's an actual toy that's in the competitive market. We're not actually making real toys or selling real toys. You know, it's like a background actor to our game. But if they can do it and sell it in stores alongside them, you know, Spider Guy, Bat Guy. Yeah, just like, yeah, what are these based on? Just a lot of care and effort not to tread on any toes.
I mean, I suppose now with them going completely bankrupt, you could have all the toy stores as Toys R Us.
That's it. Oh, steal all their IP toys, come at us.
Yeah. But the I'm sure, like, a lot of the stuff in the game so far, like, you recognise. And the Slobkins, they're something that I'm sure didn't they exist like in the 90s?
Yeah.
But maybe under a different name. And they were like hand puppets, I think.
Yeah, they resemble Boglins.
That's the one.
Yeah, they resemble Boglins a little bit. Yeah.
That's
I remember you going off about them when we were playing Fretch, and you're like, I swear I recognize these from when I was a kid. And I was like, I was about two. So I don't, but
yeah, they were brilliant, and
they were little weird little creatures. Yeah, there's most of the stuff in there has references. I mean, there's loads of other really just elements of the game and toy world and geometry that we use. I don't know. I don't think a lot of it is on the current released early access version, but they're just made out of other toy pieces and stuff that I remember from when I was a kid. Like, we have fences that, you know, resemble the famous 90s Jurassic Park toy kit, for example. And I've had friends of mine go, holy shit, I swear I used to have this fence. Why would I recognize a fence? And it's
it was bugging
just happens
it was
to
so
resemble
long.
It.
I was like, then I like, obviously I went and Googled it, and I'm like, no, that they don't Slobkins don't exist. Like, what am I seeing? What is this? And yeah, I'm glad you finally.
You were going on about that for a week afterwards, trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
that's it. That shows that it's at work. It's different enough that it isn't one to one or even infringing on anything, but you can tell what little slot it fit into in that little bit of 80s to 90s thing.
And like the
close but legally distinct from.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, like the plain aeroplane kits that glue it.
Yeah.
I think that's, I guess, half the fun of developing a game such as this. Like, you can kind of take those leaps in a sense, and it's like, well, it's not exactly that. So you know.
Yeah, it's a good way to let our creativity run wild, and also for another kind of level of meta content in a way, like in the sense that we have to create, we can't copy the writing or the exact layout of the artwork on the boxes, so we have to create again similar but completely different designs, and then they're full of text, and so all the text on all the products in the game is all just silly childish humor that we've snuck in. So there's an extra level there. But a lot of people come to me and be like, oh, I was reading the back of the toy packaging. Or I was decided to read the text on the thing on the menu. And that's well funny. And it's so it's loads of little things like that hidden around in it that we get to take advantage of.
Yeah, looking through the Steam screenshots at the moment, I can see that there's the warning, Nova will ever read this text.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are just silly things like that, just hidden amongst, hidden around all the game, because we have so much real estate to fill, essentially.
Yeah.
So,
obviously, we've got dinosaurs coming into the game. There's the new paratroopers and things like that. What else can we expect from the 2.0 release in terms of new enemies?
I can't even think if we've missed one off. I mean, we have some saved.
Yeah, Whist one.
Is that the latest one that Josh has animated?
No, it's the
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay.
All
right. Can you talk about it?
Why not?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just so there's one that we've not announced yet that we're again like we want to put it in the game because I just think it's hilarious and mm-hmm. and I think people will appreciate it. But we've got an enemy that is a little My Little Pony dolls. You know, the little just the little toys that match the franchise. They basically look like that, little magical ponies. But the twist is that they're an enemy, and they like a really really good and really good fun to fight enemy. We just had them rigged up this week. The animations are looking good.
That's exciting. Yeah,
I can already see that being my nightmare in VR. Jesus Christ. Death by My Little Pony. Jesus.
I also remember we also got one class called the Assassins. And the Soldiers. So they have same size as the players, but they come in different classes, which will be quite dangerous. So the assassin, for example, looks like the assassin from Half-Life, you know, the black guys at the end.
Oh, yeah. Right,
at the end, with the tactical, how do you call it? The goggles.
Yeah, the stealth goggles.
Like Sam Fisher from thingy, Splinter Cell.
Yeah, like the night vision goggles and stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Night vision goggles. Thank you. So we have those as well. They're gonna bring a more typical enemy into the game as well, which will attack the players. And then we got the rocket launcher, but that should have been already in the announcement a while ago.
Yeah,
It might take a while until that gets in, but it will get in at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen the you announced the UFO as well. More things in the air that are going to destroy us.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, we're bringing air combat in now because pretty good. Oh, and the bouncy balls. I'm forgetting all these. I'm not sure what we've announced and what we haven't.
I don't think I've seen bouncy balls.
Yeah, they're kind of like a low tier enemy, but they're kind of like one of the swarm enemies, so they're really easy to kill. But there's just absolutely loads of them,
like the pissing Beyblades.
Yeah, you like them, but even worse.
Yeah,
Jesus, I remember those.
Oh. Yeah, the spinners have that speed, and they just come flying in. But the bouncy balls are just incredibly difficult to shoot because they're just bouncing up and down. But they sometimes have like really strange bounce patterns where you'll try and predict them as they're about to jump, but then they'll bounce low and do like a spin move and hit you and like explode when they're next to you. So they're a pretty deadly new enemy that's really kind of fun to actually try and shoot. And then like the UFOs as well. We've got the classic 50s style theremin sound, you know, for them. So it sounds like the old UFOs. Oh, yeah, it's great.
So I guess the final thing that we can talk about, if that's something you can talk about, is are we any closer to a release for 2.0?
Never closer than anything. No, we definitely are. We're just every time each one of the people in the team loads up the game, all of us are all commenting how it's just shaping up so nice, and we can we're starting to see the lights at the end of the tunnel, hopefully. If all goes smooth and we, you know, get all these new features, we're having a big refactor of some visual elements at the minute, just redesigning our entire user interface and stuff. So once that's done, then we've got all the other guys putting together the gameplay and
if I can say something here as well.
Go ahead, mate.
To answer your question, we have pretty much scheduled update or release date. So we have a schedule that we're working on where mm-hmm. we can see, okay, if we are in that schedule, the thing is, life happens. So this is for the first time actually over the past, let's say, year, where because a lot of prototyping was happening and a lot of changes. So we never really know, okay, what is the scope? What are we dealing with until everything is kind of in place? Now, for the first time, we actually have a schedule that we are working in and schedule tasks and a release date. But we haven't really specifically or publicly talked about it, as we just want to make sure that we finish those things first. And once we feel happy about it, then we're going to announce it officially. So that's the one thing I think we really can admit that we have something planned in terms of the timing. It's just a question if we get all the tasks done in that time.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic to hear. Definitely looking forward to jumping back into the game when that launches.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
That'll be another hilarious stream we can do.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
Your head off of bouncy balls because you can't shoot them in here.
They're going to drive you nuts, I promise.
Oh, I can't wait. And hopefully I don't fall down the attic door when in Grandpa.
Plenty more traps coming.
Yeah. The first thing I did, I was like, oh, I wonder what happens if I go down. Oh, okay, I'm dead.
No, plenty more death areas and environment hazards, and really, really playing with the game.
Please tell me that the iron's on in the kitchen environment.
No, it isn't. Ulrich, add it to the list. Yep. The oven's on, and the tap is on.
Just have it melt you and stick you.
Yeah, you just go near the iron and you just melt to it. That'd be brilliant.
Melts your right arm. So.
Good. Be good.
Cool. Well, okay, so. Before we sign off, is there anything that you guys want to mention? Is there anything that you want to throw out into the world?
I think your questions have covered everything, unless Ulrich, you can think of anything.
No. Thanks for having us on and for the very comprehensive interview.
No problem at all.
I think that covered everything, and we'd be trying our best to release the update and the entire game as soon as possible.
We just want it to be good. That's it. We just don't want to release a piece of shit. We don't want anyone to ever feel like they regret their purchase, and we don't want to release something that I am not proud to show my family and friends. You know what I mean? I want something where I can be like, oh, hey, check out this game. You might have a good few hours of fun with it. And yeah, so especially with the new local co-op and stuff like that, I can just sit and play with your mates on split screen and stuff like that. It's something that, you know, all the best local split screen co-op games dying out now, you know, with Halo's not including them and stuff like that. I hate the lack of split screen co-op, and that's what I'm all about. So yeah, if you want that,
with
buy
just
our game.
Two players or all four?
All four. Oh, up to four. Yeah.
Yeah.
And LAN up to eight.
Oh, okay. Cool.
In the future, maybe.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
All right.
Oh,
so
yeah. Thank you very much, guys.
Exciting stuff ahead. Yeah. No. Definitely. I'm like, I've always been keeping an eye and making sure that, you know, you guys are still working hard on it, because I want to see this game. So yeah, that's why I've been really excited to get you guys on board.
Awesome.
Great.
All right, well, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
For those listening and whatnot, we're hopefully going to have the podcast again in 2 weeks' time. But if not, make sure you stay subscribed and head on over to nerdable.com, facebook.com/nerdable, twitch.tv/nerdable, and twitter.com/nerdable to keep up to date with the podcast and everything else that we do. But that's it from us. Join us again next time, I hope, I think. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye. Bye, Sunday.